Welcome into this Wednesday edition of ESPN FC. I'm Sebastian Salazar. Great to be with you. We'll be joined in just a little bit by Alejandro Moreno and Craig Burley as we look ahead to the restart of La Liga on Thursday. We'll also go direct to Amsterdam to talk about Ajax's bevy of young players, where they could end up in the upcoming transfer window. But we start the show in the German Cup semifinal round, second of the two semifinals. Bayern Munich facing off against Eintracht Frankfurt, and Bayern Munich comes out with a 2-1 victory, advancing them to the final July 4th against Leverkusen. The goals for Bayern Munich, Ivan Perisic and Robert Lewandowski. He's the game winner in the 75th, so this one level at one all the way until the final quarter hour of play. For more, we bring in Frank Leboeuf and Craig Burley. Craig, I'll start with you. The result we expect from Bayern Munich, but far from the performance.
Yeah, not the best performance, to be frank, and made tougher work of it than it should have been. We're a little sloppy in the final third, some bad touches from Coman, even Lewandowski a couple of times when he was put through, got the ball stuck under his feet, but they got the job done. I mean, let's be quite honest about this. In that first half, Manuel Neuer could have sat in a deck chair reading a good novel, and all he had to do was get up and play the odd pass that came back to him and start a move again and sit back down, because Frankfurt offered very little. They got a little better in the second half and it got a little bit more tense, but you always felt that Bayern would just conjure something up and get the winner and go to the final.
Frank, what did you make of the Bayern Munich performance today?
For me, it's understandable that in the second half they got a little bit sloppy. You know, it was so easy in the first half because they put all ingredients needed and they were absolutely fantastic and more from far superior to Eintracht. And then they came back second half, very sloppy, but it allows us to have a little bit of suspense to see Frankfurt attacking and getting a goal. But As I said before, Bayern Munich was more superior and lacked, what, 3, 4, 5 minutes after they scored the second goal, showing that if they wanted, they will win easily. So it's understandable. I see Paris Saint-Germain as well doing the same in the Ligue 1, where they get sloppy because they have nobody or almost nobody in front, and it's the same. It seems to be the same for Bayern Munich since the restart of the competition, that they're so much better than anybody else that sometimes they get sloppy. Sometimes.
Craig, what do you think? Just a bad day at the office for Bayern Munich, or did you see something more that might come back to haunt them? Maybe not in Bundesliga, which seems kind of wrapped up, but down the road in Champions League per se.
Well, a bad day at the office is if you don't win the semi-final and don't get to the final. So it's a good day at the office, but not a brilliant performance. But they'll not be fussed about that. They'll get a bigger test, you would imagine, from Leverkusen, who they've beaten recently. But they should get a bigger test in the final, for sure. Look, one of the things that's noticeable is that when a team gets a little flat-footed and a little complacent, as Frank mentioned, like Bayern did because of the difference in quality, there's no crowd to snap you out of it. There's nobody to jeer you on. There's nobody to get behind you. There's nobody to let you know that you need to up your game. And I think that is the one thing that we're missing. Clearly, obviously, there's nobody at the games and we have that sort of tinny atmosphere. But it is one of the things that can change the mindset of a player. When a crowd starts getting jeering and when a crowd starts getting nervous and it wants to see something better, that can jolt you on to go and finish a game and put the game away, where there's just nobody to do that at the moment. And maybe we're seeing a little bit of that in the performance from Bayern today.
Frank, final thoughts on Bayern Munich. Any long-term cause for concern from what you saw today?
No, I'm not worried. I'm not worried at all. I think they're going to win easily the Bundesliga. They're also going to win the German Cup. And, well, so far, because the other contender in Champions League didn't start, they are the best team. And they've been the best team for me before the coronavirus pandemic and in Europe. So they are for me the best contender also for the Champions League, because they have a fantastic squad. We saw Thiago Alcantara and Martinez coming in and being also brilliant. It's not only the first 11, it's the whole squad being very, very strong and very, very homogene. And I really think that they're going to do very well in the Champions League. So what happened today is just a human let's say, cause of superiority, but not in a complex of superiority, just a simple superiority that sometimes you let go. Don't forget that I'm very surprised that Flick put all the first 11 that we saw last week. I thought he will substitute a little bit of them to rest them. But they're so competitive that they want to win everything.
There you have it. Bayern Munich, Bayer Leverkusen. They'll meet in the German Cup final on July 4th. Thank you very much, gentlemen. Don't go far. We'll need you for extra time. All your questions coming your way for Frank and Craig. Hashtag FC Extra Time. The Dutch football season was canceled back in late April, but that hasn't stopped Ajax's players from being linked to pretty much everybody in the world. For the latest, check out the Transfer Talk portion of our website. For more, we welcome into the first time to ESPN FC, Milan van Dongen. He joins us from Fox Sports in the Netherlands. He joins us, in fact, from Amsterdam. Milan, welcome to the show. Let's start with Donny van de Beek. A couple weeks ago, it seemed like this player was destined for Real Madrid. Now, all of a sudden, Manchester United may be in the driver's seat. What can you tell us?
Yeah, thank you for coming up in your show. Everybody was actually sure he would go to Real Madrid because there was a agreement between both clubs already a few months ago for 50 million of euros. And the only thing that lacked was his medical in Madrid and of course the signings under the contract. But the whole contract was made between the clubs. He was already, he agreed himself with Real Madrid, so everything was fine. But then the corona, the pandemic came around the corner, and Real is, they're doubting a bit. They first want to finish the league in La Liga. And they are also doubting because Madrid, of course, was hit quite hard by the pandemic. So they're still a bit doubting if they can make such a big transfer of 50 million. It's not a huge amount for Real, but of course, in the current times, it's still a lot of money. So that's come a bit it's a bit of doubt in Madrid, and now all of a sudden Manchester United came around the corner. According to rumors, they offer around 40 million of euros. Ajax wants the 50 million of Real Madrid, of course. They won't sell him for less. Up to Ajax, it doesn't really matter where he goes. Van de Beek always wanted to go to Real Madrid, of course, because Real Madrid, according to many, is the biggest club in the world. Manchester United is quite a big club as well, of course. But he also, because of Madrid doubting that much, he's doubting himself now. So, it's a bit of a fight between two clubs. And, we don't know where it's going at this moment.
Milan, I wonder if you could break down Van de Beek's game a little bit, because a lot of Manchester United fans are wondering if they already have a player like this in Bruno Fernandes.
Yeah, he's comparable to Bruno Fernandes, but he's not the same. He's a really box-to-box player. He isn't the skillful number 10 like Hakim Ziyech, who got sold to Chelsea. He doesn't have those skills, but he's really multifunctional. He can do everything, actually. He can be a number 10, be a number 6, number 8. So I think he's really good in adjusting his game to what a coach wants from him. So I think he could play next to Bruno Fernandes, but you also have Paul Pogba and some other really good midfielders. So maybe Real Madrid would be a better team looking at the players they have now. But the advantage for Van de Beek that he's really good in adapting. He's a really smart player. That would be his advantage. So I think it's possible, yeah.
Van de Beek's 23 years old. He's played in some big games. Sergiño Dest is only 19, and he hasn't really played in some big games. Despite that, he's been linked to PSG, Bayern Munich, and Barcelona. How likely is it that he would make a move to one of those clubs and do so this summer?
Yeah, imagine if you're 19 and you're linked to these clubs, then it's quite a decision to make. Also quite a decision to refuse an offer of one of these clubs. But he's only 19, as you said, and he made his debut like 11 months ago in July. He didn't experience the famous Champions League season of Ajax when they beat Tottenham, Real Madrid, Juventus. He wasn't there yet. So he's still very young and not that experienced, but still because he's so quick, so skillful. He makes a lot of mistakes still, but you can see the talent, the big talent. So that's why all these clubs are interested. And Ajax, of course, wants to renew his contract, but until now he refused. So it's very, it's probably he will make the move to, I think, Bayern München. But these other clubs are around the corner as well. But I read Hansi Flick yesterday, the coach of Bayern Munich. He said, we want a skillful wing back with a lot of speed. So He didn't actually say we want Sergiño Dest, but you could fill it in.
Dest linked to Bayern Munich. He's linked to Barcelona as well. Also linked to Barcelona, a product of their academy, Andre Onana. Where do you think Onana could actually end up where he could be the starter? Because that's really the question for a goalie, isn't it?
Yeah, he wants to be a starter. He was at Barcelona before, but then he moved to Ajax because he didn't get enough chances. And he really developed himself at Ajax. Maybe most people don't know him really properly, but I think he's definitely in the top five goalkeepers of the world. He's so skillful, so quick in his reactions. And furthermore, he's a really good, he's really good with the ball, especially for Barcelona. That's a really good skill to have because they want to play high up and need a goalkeeper who can take part in playing football. But he wants to be a starter, that's for sure. And if Ter Stegen is going to stay at Barcelona, yeah, I don't know. Maybe Barcelona is his dream club because he was there as a kid. So that might be the only club where he goes to as a second goalkeeper. But otherwise, to the other clubs in Europe, he just goes when he's a starter. And he's still also thinking of maybe another year at Ajax because if there's not a big club coming for him, he's still happy at Ajax. But last year he made an agreement, as many players did at Ajax, stay one more year and then for a reasonable price, we're going to sell you. And that's the agreement he made. Van de Beek as well made that agreement. So if a club, for example, like Chelsea, where you heard some rumors of, is coming to Amsterdam and offers a reasonable amount of money, he will go.
The other day on the show, Don Hutchison mentioned Nicolas Tagliafico as a possible target for Chelsea. I wonder what you think about that possibility. Could Tagliafico be on his way out at 27 years old for a Premier League move?
I think he's definitely able to. Maybe he's a bit underrated at Ajax because he doesn't have the skills like, for example, Dest, but he's a way better defender. The question is how Lampard wants to play. Does he want a skillful, quick wingback, or does he want a wingback who also is really good in defending? Although he combines both. When he came to Ajax, he wasn't such a skillful player. He said himself, in Argentina, he just had to defend. But in a few years, he developed really quick and learned himself, and the coach teach him, of course, as well. But he now is a way better football player. So I think if he would make the move to Chelsea, he can develop himself again, although he's 27, but there's still some things to improve. So I think he would definitely be a good signing for Chelsea. And he's also a player who made the agreement last year to make a move if a good club makes a good offer to Amsterdam. And he definitely wants to go. He also said the Eredivisie, it's a nice league, but it's not a good level. So he wants to play in a big league. That's also the reason why he came to Europe and made his first step in Amsterdam and now wants to make more steps in a big league in Europe.
Thank you very much, Milan. A quick reminder, don't miss tomorrow's edition of ESPN FC. Dan Thomas is back. So is La Liga. Dan and the rest of the crew will break down the return of Spanish football.
Is your money not sure what to do with itself right now? At Ally, they'll help it save for the future with their smart savings tools. Bucket your money for the things that matter most. Analyze your spending and save automatically. All on top of a competitive rate. For all things money, you deserve an Ally. Visit ally.com/savings for more info. Ally, do it right. Ally Bank, member FDIC.
Though we're apart these days, we're sharing more. So at GEICO, we'd like to say thanks. Thanks for sharing your savage dance moves. Thanks for sharing your DIY haircut fails. Thanks for sharing your inner lip sync star. Now it's our turn to share with the GEICO Give Back, a 15% credit on car and motorcycle policies for current and new customers. Because we're committed for the long haul, the 15% credit lasts your full policy term. Visit geico.com/giveback for more info and eligibility.
La Liga set to return tomorrow with the Derby Sevillano. Sevilla and Real Betis both looking up the table at Barcelona and Real Madrid. Barcelona 2 points clear at the top of La Liga over their arch rivals. For more, we bring in Craig Burley, Alejandro Moreno. Ale, I'll start with you. Barcelona will get Luis Suarez back after a long injury layoff due to that knee injury. How does that impact their title chances?
It helps them. that's the only thing you can say, is that Luis Suarez gives this team a focal point in the attack. What they've had for years now, what you expect to see in the final third, is Luis Suarez peeling off the shoulder of defenders with nice little movements inside the 18-yard box. The fact that he's going to finish the plays, and then he gives a natural striker in that position. Unlike Antoine Griezmann, who whenever he has drifted into that position, he's decided to go out wide. He's decided to go underneath, and Barcelona seems to be missing that player inside the 18-yard box. Well, Luis Suarez is that and more. And so for me, I just think Barcelona, in some ways, find a positive in this whole pandemic, in this whole COVID-19 situation, in that Luis Suarez is able to get healthy, ready, and prepare for the remainder of the season.
Craig, other side of this, Real Madrid gets Eden Hazard back. What impact do you think he can have? Obviously, in the beginning part of the season, not nearly the impact Luis Suarez had for Barcelona.
To be honest, Sebi, I've got no idea. It's a bit like who's going to win the title. I've got no idea, because we don't know what frame of mind and what fitness level both these teams are at, all these players. Yeah, this pandemic has allowed clubs from all different countries to get players with a 3-4 month injury potentially fit. Eden Hazard comes into that bracket. But we saw the shape of Eden Hazard coming into the season. So we have to wait and see what kind of fitness levels he's up to. I think Luis Suarez is a bigger player for Barcelona than Eden Hazard has been so far, clearly, for Real Madrid. But if you look at the two teams just before the lockdown, Barcelona were in slightly better form, although Real Madrid did beat them in the Clásico. But I suppose with the shutdown, sort of all that goes out the window. But maybe, just maybe, it's Zidane's experience of these pressurised situations that might be the difference between the two teams.
Craig, you mentioned Zidane, the big game experience. Are you more confident in Real Madrid than you are in Barcelona at this point?
Well, I don't think there was... I think there was a lot of talk about Quique Setién when he took over, about style and all that kind of stuff. But I think it was a little pedestrian at some points. And he was criticised for the overpassing. Almost like, you know, when I say passing with a purpose, well, they passed it just for the sake of it at times. And so there is a question mark about how he's going to fit all the pieces of the jigsaw in. Ali mentioned Griezmann. And it was problematic for him in terms of when Suarez was fit, playing on the left-hand side, and he voiced his concerns about it. But those concerns were always going to be there when he made that big money move. And I just feel that Barca are so reliant on Lionel Messi that if Real Madrid can get all the pieces of the jigsaw ready with Zidane, who's been there, seen it, and done it at the Bernabeu, that might just be the factor between now and the end of the season. Because yes, they've got a lot of great players, Barcelona. But it all boils down to one thing at the end of the day. All comes back to the one thing that makes a difference, and that's Mr. Messi.
Ale, Barcelona or Real Madrid? Who are you putting your trust in?
Prior to the shutdown and the pandemic and COVID-19 and all of this, I would have said nobody. I don't trust either one of these teams, because any time that you turn around and you thought, okay, this is when Real Madrid is really going to create some momentum, they're playing better, they're more confident, then they drop a couple points here and there. And then you think Barcelona is the one that is creating momentum. Then they're playing better. Then they think, okay, this is the moment in which they're going to create some separation at the table, and then they lose El Clásico. And so there is not a lot of confidence on either one of these teams to just kind of pull away from the other. I think it's still wide open. Post-pandemic, I still believe that both of these teams are flawed, and they structurally they have some issues and some imbalances. I'm going to take Lionel Messi and Barcelona for that very reason. For the same reason that Craig just mentioned, it comes down to Mr. Messi. I'm going to trust Messi and Barcelona to do just enough to get past Real Madrid.
Game set to start then in Spain tomorrow, and they will not stop. Sevilla Real Betis get things underway. Our first look at Barcelona will be Saturday versus Mallorca. First look at Real Madrid Sunday against Eibar. Make sure to download the latest edition of the Gab and Jules podcast. The boys cover everything from Timo Werner's move to Chelsea to Manchester City's case at the Court of Arbitration for Sport City looking to avoid that Champions League ban. We now welcome in one of the stars of the pod, Julien Laurent. Jules, let's start with this report out of France Football. Newcastle and Coutinho have reportedly already begun talks. Should we believe it?
Well, the thing that we know is that Kia Jorabchan, who is Coutinho's agent, He's looking for a club in the Premier League for him. We know that that's the priority. He wants to come back to England. If you remember, he had a pretty good spell at Liverpool before going to Barcelona, where things have not worked out for him. And I think Newcastle potentially could be one of the clubs. However, right now, the takeover by the Saudis is still not effective. It still hasn't given the green light by the Premier League. So right now, the club certainly cannot afford someone like Coutinho. So unless that changes and unless that takeover goes through, then that's a maybe. Right now, it's impossible. And as we've mentioned, there's other clubs that have been linked with him, Arsenal, Spurs, Chelsea, and I believe there's not much in it so far.
Jules, a couple days ago, you tweeted PSG will not renew the contract of Thiago Silva. He's 35, about to turn 36. Two-part question here. How much does he have left in the tank, and where do you think he'll end up?
Yeah, it was sad news, really, because I think Thiago himself was really hoping that the clubs would change his mind and we offer him 1 year, maybe two more years. Although, as you said, he's turning 36 in September. That won't be the case. Leonardo gave him a call to give him the bad news that he won't be renewed at the club after 8 years in Paris. He will finish the season and sort of sign a short-term contract to be able to play in the domestic cups and in the Champions League, but that would be it. I think he still has a lot to offer. We saw him having a very good season again this year in the league and also, I thought, in Europe, although he was not in the game in the second leg against Dortmund at the Parc des Princes because he just came back from an injury. But I still think he has a lot of experience. He's still very athletic. His reading of the game is fantastic. And he looks after himself so well that I think he can easily play another year or two. He wants to stay in Europe for two more years. I believe there will be clubs, especially in Italy, like Napoli, like Milan, who will be seriously looking at him and maybe getting on a free. But I think it's a real shame that, unfortunately, his history in Paris is coming to an end.
Meanwhile, Jules, elsewhere in France, a court has reportedly ruled that there will be no relegation in Ligue 1. So what does that mean for next season? Are we going to have 22 teams in the top flight of French football?
Well, that means that the mess is still going on and it's getting actually messier and messier. I mean, this court, which is the sort of council states, if you want, the top court in France, decided to look into it. They said, okay, we will take the last table like the league did, and so PSG are champions and nothing changes. But actually, you can't have relegation because there were still 10 games to play and 30 points to be won. However, this is only sort of their ruling, their judgment, in the sense that in the books, in the rules, the structure of Ligue 1, the French top flight, says and states that he can only have 20 teams, not 21, not 22, not 18. He has to be 20. So now the league will have to look into this decision and this call by the courts and deciding what to do. They can still, with the federation above them, decide that actually you can't have 22 teams, so they will have to be 20 and Amiens and Toulouse will have to go down despite what the court has just ruled. Or they can change the whole structure of the league, which I think is very unlikely. So we will need to wait a little bit more and see, but I think it's still very unlikely that we will have 22 teams next season in Ligue 1.
Okay, Jules, enough about courthouses. Let's turn our attention to what really matters. It is the phenomenon sweeping the world, or at least our website, Battle of the Leagues. You find yourself representing Ligue 1, of course, in Group B. You had a Gavin Jules podcast showdown today against Gab's Bundesliga team. What happened, and do you have any regrets as a manager?
You're right, it was a big game. I knew after drawing with Sidlo and La Liga that this one was almost decisive. I could not lose it. We were winning. I thought we were controlling the game pretty well. Cesc Fabregas made a decisive entrance as well in the second half and set up Aouar for our goal. And we were 1-0 up. And then I think the genius of Kai Havertz just appeared.
Again, Jules representing for Ligue 1 in the Battle of the Leagues. They're in Group B over in Group A. No surprise, Mark Ogden in the Premier League starting to run away with it. Again, it's the Battle of the Leagues. Don't miss any of the action over on our website.
Is your money not sure what to do with itself right now? At Ally, they'll help it save for the future with their smart savings tools. Bucket your money for the things that matter most. Analyze your spending and save automatically. All on top of a competitive rate. For all things money, you deserve an Ally. Visit ally.com/savings for more info. Ally, do it right. Ally Bank, member FDIC. Napa Know How.
Get all the quality parts you need at your locally owned NAPA. Because right now, when you order from NAPA online, you can pick up curbside at your local store in just 30 minutes. Or get your order delivered direct to your door with free one-day shipping and over 160,000 quality parts when you spend $50 or more. Quality parts delivered quickly and safely. That's NAPA know-how.
NAPA know-how.
At participating stores, standard ground shipping and exclusions apply.
All right, that's all the time we've got for this edition of ESPN FC. Thanks especially to Julian Laurent, the star of the Battle of the Leagues over on ESPNFC.com. Thanks as well to everyone else who joined us on today's show. Craig Burley, Alejandro Moreno, Frank LeBeouf, and our newest correspondent, Milan Van Dongen. For all them, I'm Sebastian Salazar. Thanks for watching, and we'll catch you on the next edition of ESPN FC. Hey there, everybody. Welcome into this edition of Extra Time on Wednesday, June 10th, joined by Frank LeBeouf, Craig Burley. I'm Sebastian Salazar. We have a boatload of your questions. I think something like 10 deep. The first one, who was the better player, Zidane or Maradona? Frank, you get the first shot.
Definitely go for Zidane, and I will explain why. It's not because he's French and we play together. It's just that I always thought that football was played with 11 players and not one player and the others. And Maradona was capable of doing crazy, fantastic things. I never accepted the hand of God. I think it's a big mistake from the referee, and Maradona should have apologized for that instead of bragging about it. I think Zidane was a better passer. He was able to think about the others and not only about taking on players. It's why I think Zidane was more useful, not maybe more entertaining than Maradona, but more useful for a teammate like me, more useful for a squad to win a game.
Craig, among the two of you, who's the bigger legend at Chelsea?
Well, Frank, because Frank would definitely be welcome back before me. For sure.
Where did Frank finish in the most hated list?
We did all the hard work before Frank and all the boys came in and took the success. Chelsea was a changing club. Chelsea, we reached the FA Cup final in 94. That was the first time for a long, long time. Then we reached the semi-finals again and the final again. We started to become a club that was competing for some trophies. Then we signed better players like Frank and others, and the money became more available, and Chelsea improved. So I saw a period at Chelsea in the late 80s when they didn't have two pennies to rub together. But that's a completely different football club nowadays. But I would say Frank is certainly more welcome at Stamford Bridge than me.
Frank, how come you weren't on the list of hated Chelsea players like Craig? Are you jealous?
No, I'm not. Definitely not. No. I don't accept the challenge, you know. I'm happy to be more than welcome at the bridge where I come sometimes. But I just want to come back to what Craig said before. It's true. And thanks to Ken Bates, who did everything for the club to come back to his prime, which was in the 70s, let's say, or before in the 50s, 55, when they won the championship, I think. But yes, it's true that beginning of the 90s, the club changed, and the money came at the same time. I came with Zola, Di Matteo, Viali, almost a year after Gullit and Petrescu, Mark Hughes as well. So it dramatically changed. But I think we were also just at the beginning of the new era of Chelsea. And Chelsea came back to its best when they won the Premier League for another time in the years 2000-something.
2004, I believe.
2004, thank you.
I think so.
Next question for both Frank and Craig. Have you guys ever been mistaken for somebody else when fans bump into you in the streets? I reckon Frank probably gets mistaken for Fabian Barthez a lot. Likewise, and we know this, Craig, you always get mistaken for George Clooney.
Well, I don't get mistaken for anybody, to be honest. But the odd time somebody has mentioned Paul Merson to me, the former Arsenal Middlesbrough, Portsmouth, England player, that there may be some similarities. Personally, I think it's more like George Clooney, but you know, I would say that.
Yeah, it's true. You have a little bit of Paul Merson. That's fair to say. It's true that people say sometimes Fabio Barthez, and I remember somebody calling me like that. Hey, Fabio! And I never turned my head, and they insulting Fabien Barthez, or I call Fabien and I say, Fabien, somebody down the street is insulting you right now, so I don't know what to do with it. But some people, they confuse me with the actor of Lost. Sorry, I forgot his name. I think that guy is like 15 years older than me, but somehow they say that I look like him.
Craig, Frank has mentioned... Oh, no. Sorry, got ahead of myself. That's too down. Frank McManaman is where our next question comes from. What were the worst penalty misses throughout your career? Craig, you go first.
The worst?
The worst.
I don't really consider them... Well, I can tell you, I took some penalties the year that we won the title in Scotland, and that was the first title Celtic had won in 10 years. And there was an awful lot of pressure, so there was none missed that season. I did miss one at Derby when I took three in a Premier League game, but it wasn't a disastrous miss. It was my third penalty. I scored the first two, and the goalkeeper just happened to save the third one. I haven't hit any like Gabriel Jesus did not too long ago, you know, where it's just horrible. I've not had too many really bad ones. I've had the odd one where the keeper's guessed the right way and they haven't gone then. But I haven't, like, hammered one, like, you know, 15 foot over the bar or 5 yards wide of the post. I haven't done that.
Frank, you got a worst penalty miss on your resume?
Yes, definitely. It left me a bitter taste, in fact. It was in the Champions League against Feyenoord Rotterdam, in the Champions League. And we were 0-0, and we had a penalty. And I don't remember what I did, but I remember that I missed it, and I remember that it was a crappy one. But I don't remember what I did. Fortunately, we won. I think we won 3-1. But I do remember that it was a bad shot, and that's the only one that I recall. I missed, I don't know, 3, 4, 5 maybe, with out of 50, 52, so it's not too bad.
Next question, gentlemen, a little bit complicated, so follow along as best you can. Now, you can only do one of these in your life and not the other. I'll start with Frank. You have the choice between only acting or only playing football. What are you taking?
Definitely only playing football. The uncertainty of the game, the fight that you have and that you can face, and the pressure that you have before game is never comparable to any other job, profession. It's crazy what we feel in sport. And some people, they ask me, yeah, you are in plays and you are in front of an audience, so what do you think, what you can compare? It's no comparison. We play in front of, I don't know, 10,000 until 100,000, and we feel the pressure like you cannot feel in another part of life. So I played for 17 years in football, and that was full of pressure, full of intensity. I never regret it, and if I could go back, I would go back.
Craig, your choice is golf or football, which I know you didn't really seem to have a choice, does it?
Yeah, you're really asking me that?
Twitter wants to know.
Golf.
Really?
Golf. I love it.
If it wasn't golf, we know you do have some other hobbies like cooking. Craig, Frank has mentioned in the past he only eats food for fuel. Given that you are the self-named best cook on the FC crew alongside Shaka, what signature dish would you make Frank to change his mind on food?
What do you mean? He only eats his food for fuel. What do you mean,
yes,
Frank?
He gets no joy from eating, apparently.
You don't like eating?
No, not necessarily. It's okay, but I feel it's something you have to do to fuel your body, and that's it.
You don't enjoy a Frenchman that doesn't enjoy the delicacies of the tastes of
What would I make?
He hates carbs. We know that. He's an anti-carb, very much. Anti-bread.
Well, I would give him some carbs. I would give him a nice seafood mix. Proper, fresh seafood, squid, mussels, everything. And I'd make a nice sort of linguine. That's what I'd do. Mm. Gives you your carbs, you get the goodness of the fish, it's fresh, little sauce in there. I could conjure that up.
I would agree.
Craig, would you ever eat a plate prepared by Craig?
Yes, the linguine alle vongole, as Italians say, is absolutely fantastic. And why not? I will start to change my mind if it's prepared by Craig.
Stevie Nichol doesn't think so, because I ordered one night when we were out with the boys in a little bit of a group gathering, and I ordered a linguine, sort of vongole, as you mentioned, and Stevie looked across the table at me and went, "Oh, that looks horrible," because it wasn't shepherd's pie, obviously.
Oh, man.
That's horrible. Oh.
All right. Next question. How will Craig and Frank fare replacing Jules on the Gab and Jules podcast? Just sitting there saying, yeah, 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 while Gab does all the talking. Craig, you signing up for that job anytime soon?
No. Won't be happening. They'd have to drag me there. Wild horses would have to drag me there, kicking and screaming. So I I've got no concerns there, because that will not be happening. Although Frank's been on.
Our
Frank,
final question.
Yes, I've been there. I've been there last week, and it was enjoyable, very nice. But I think they're very good at it, so we're going to let them doing the thing they like.
All right, last question. Craig, would you rather do extra time from the parking lot at the golf course or watch a two-hour-long movie featuring Frank as the main character?
Well, I quite enjoyed the extra time from the car park. It was an emergency call that I took, although they could have done it without me, I'm sure. It wasn't a major drama, but I quite enjoyed it. I didn't mind. So that's a no-brainer. It's extra time, absolutely.
Yeah. So you don't want to watch me in a 2 hours movie with the lead character? What's wrong with you?
I had to watch and listen to you in the 90s every day. I used to hear you coming to the training ground before I could see you. Right, here's LeBouf coming. Here's LeBouf. Here he comes, boys. Cover your ears. We've got 2 hours of this. 2 hours.
And that's true. It's true, Sabi. I have to admit, I'm a talker. I'm a real talker, and I know the British
really
couldn't bear that in the morning. They couldn't bear that.
No, Wisey, Dennis Wise used to have some choice words in trying to tell Frank to stop talking, which are not repeatable on here.
No, of course not.
All right, we will leave it there for extra time. We will, of course, be back on tomorrow's show. Dan Thomas is back in the host chair as La Liga returns. Don't miss it.